K-Fest. Those days of Protoss and BASIC and Bytes. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of K-Fest. Bust off the Apple II, GS, don't sleep at night. Just fill your luggage up with floppy disks and cables. Then buy your ticket. Now you're set. And at the dorm, you'll see the hackers at their tables. Making their projects, I don't think they're finished yet. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of K-Fest. Bring out the 2+ and plug in your gear. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of K-Fest. You'll wish that K-Fest could always be here.
Welcome to the special podcast live from K-Fest, the first edition of Retro Open Antikertz Mac Quarter Poly Floppy Drop. Thank you, Steve, for that fabulous musical intro.
Welcome.
Just to give everyone a background, in recent years there's been a special podcast from the show that includes hosts of some of the vintage computing podcasts. Last year was Open Antikertz with hosts from Open Apple, Antic, and 1 MHz. This year is an absolute embarrassment of riches. We have 9 podcasting hosts representing no less than 10 podcasts on this show that all agreed to come together and see if we can pull off a joint podcast without getting into a ruckus or talking over each other. So, let's go around, have everyone introduce themselves and the podcast in which they're involved. Carrington!
Hello, I'm Carrington, and I am indeed a retro podcaster, currently on the Retro Computing Roundtable and No Quarter.
All right. Paul?
Okay. I'm Paul. I am also a podcaster. I'm currently on the Retro Computing Roundtable and Drop 3 Inches.
I'm Kevin Savitz. I am co-host of Antic, the Atari 8-Bit Podcast at ataripodcast.com.
I'm Steve Weirich, and I'm an infrequent host on Retro Computing Roundtable.
And I'm Randy Kindig, also a co-host on Antic, the Atari Bit Podcast, and Floppy Days.
Hi, my name is Ken Gagne, and I'm a podcaster.
Hi, Ken!
I'm the host of Polygamer and IndieCider.
Hi, I'm John from the Retro MacCast.
My name is Quinn Dunkey. I'm associated with no podcast whatsoever.
I'm Mike, and I'm with several of these podcasts that have been mentioned already. Let's see, what do I do?
You were recently cut loose from No Quarter.
I'm no longer with No
Quarter. Super recently, you didn't know what had just happened.
That's right. Am I still with Drop 3 Inches, Paul?
We'll see.
Okay.
There's a chance there? Okay, good.
And I think I'm still with Open Apple as well.
You're the sole host of Open Apple.
So basically rejection all around.
Do this on the air and rip the Band-Aid off.
All right, well, we are at K-Fest. I thought maybe we would go around and everybody talk about their favorite sessions and discoveries that they had this week, some of their favorite moments. And we have some newcomers here. I know some first-timers. I know myself. And John, you're also a first-timer. And Quinn is a first-timer. So we want to get their perspectives. Carrington, you want to start?
I'm not a first-timer. I'm an old-timer. That's why I fit in well against that.
How many times have you come?
I have been here. I think this is my 5th. I'm pretty sure my first time was 2007, and I only think that because I saw somebody wearing the Kansas Fest 2007 shirt. I'm like, I think that's the shirt I got. I only got one Kansas Fest shirt, and it was my first year, and I'm pretty sure it was that one. So that tells me 2007 was when I kicked off this mad, mad adventure of Kansas Festing. So I think this is my 5th time, maybe 4th time. I haven't gone every year since then. I want to go every year, though. Every year it comes up. I love it. Absolutely adore it. It's been fantastic.
We're happy to have you.
It's good to be had.
So what have you enjoyed at this
show? Tons of stuff. The main thing is the camaraderie. Like, I love the sessions, and that's fantastic, but it's really about the meeting the new people who share my interest, and that's amazing and swell. But honestly, it's the reuniting with nerdy pals that you see just once a year. There's so many people that I really enjoy hanging out with, I share a lot of interest with, and I feel real kinship to, and I only see them once a year. You only see them at Kansas Fest. And while I interact online, and that's great because we do share those interests, it's not the same as actually spending a few days, you know, dorming together, doing sessions together, trading ideas, trading floppy disks, all of that. Like, nothing beats that. So that's my favorite thing. There were also a few sessions that I really enjoyed. The podcaster of No Fixed Address, Quinn Dunkey, she brought Veronica, and something I've been reading about for ages, since that was one of the sessions I was most excited about, to be able to get almost hands-on with it and take photos and hear all about it. That was just mind-blowing and fantastic. I liked Jason Scott's session as well. I can't say it very well, but I really, really, really enjoyed that. I'm looking forward to the Lawless Legends session. That's another one that I came here really being excited about, but it's not till tomorrow, as of this recording. Mm-hmm. Something that I saw, I think, either the last year or the year before is when they got announced and sort of demoed, so I'm really excited about getting more info about that. You know what? We did a program and roundtable. There was a session. I think Mike dropped the ball completely, destroyed it, and ruined Dance Fest for everybody. That's why we brought it here, Mike. We want to talk about that. No, and so because of that, there was a gap in the schedule. So a bunch of people who code just got in a circle. I came to the room on what? Why is everyone gathered around in the circle? You're just talking coding, and I just got to sort of listen to that. And I found that really interesting, and it just... That was super fun, and I'm going to pitch that becomes a thing. I think a programmer roundtable should be at every mm-hmm. Kansas Fest. Mm-hmm. That was incredibly valuable and fun and delightful, and so I want more of that. So everything is a delight. Love Kansas Fest.
I wish we had a little bit more unstructured time at Kansas Fest for events like that roundtable, because I saw a post on Facebook that said that we have things going on from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., and there is just no time to work on your own projects mm-hmm. or even just to mingle and meet people. And if you are somebody who is staying off campus here, then you're certainly going to be missing things because you need to get back to wherever you're coming from.
Good point.
So I love that we have so many sessions to choose from, and I think that's a great problem to have. But I also remember the Kansas Fest where that wasn't the situation, where we had events from 9 to 5 and that was it. And I think that those years were equally productive but in different ways.
Nice. This is the only conference, like computer-oriented conference I go to, that doesn't have multiple tracks as well. So what's nice is you can go to every session if you want to.
Well, there was one time yesterday when
we had three sessions.
Oh, hold on. Yeah, some of you missed mine because I was like, oh,
yeah, exactly.
You know what? I'm taking that back. Kansas Fest blows.
Well, back in its early days when they had a lot of sessions, when it was a programmers conference, they had like three tracks to mm-hmm. go through. You had to pick what you wanted. Mm-hmm. But that was intended to be heavy-duty, you know, programmer-oriented stuff. And over a number of years, it was lighter, fewer people, and as the numbers of people coming have grown, the numbers of people who say, hey, I've got something cool I want to talk about, that's grown.
Kansas Fest has also remained a remarkably accessible conference for a computer-oriented conference. Like, you do not have to be a coder to come here. Most of the sessions are about using, about playing, about just exploring. So it's really, really accessible to users, I think.
Yes.
Paul, how about you? What have you enjoyed here?
Well, so this is my third Kansas Fest, and I think actually what's going to end up happening here is we're all going to have the same stuff to say. So I don't want to steal everybody's things that they enjoy, but I agree with that. I mean, it is really about kind of like seeing people and the stuff that I really like seeing the projects and people, what you know people are presenting about the projects. But it's also really neat to connect with people that I've been interacting with online. One of the things I've been working on recently is doing this disk imaging and trying to figure out ways that we can take a protected disk image and boot it on an emulator and that sort of thing. And so I've had a chance to sort of talk with the people who are really working on that also. And I hope to continue to be talking with them over the next couple days. So there's a chance to really kind of advance it much faster than just over 140 character communications. So it's really more about the people than the stuff. And yet I can't think of I wouldn't want to be in tracks such that I would have to not go to some of the stuff that I've gone to. So it's a tough call. Maybe it should be a month. But
anyway,
not with those showers.
Yeah,
or the bed.
That's true.
Or the lack of pillows.
Yeah.
Or so, the plastic beds.
So which show is this for you?
It's this one's my third.
Third, okay.
Yeah. All right. I think we should clarify for people who aren't here or listening that we're staying at Rutgers University and we're staying in dorms meant for younger, more tolerant people.
Like me.
Like Ken.
Get off my lawn.
It's like a communal shower sort of situation. And you're
prison shower.
Prison showers, pretty much. Yeah. And it's fine for a few days. It's an adventure.
You have to bring your own pillow.
We did.
You should bring your own
pillow. Ken and I, before the thing started, Ken and I went to Target. And how many pillows did you buy?
I bought 8.
Yeah. How many did you manage to give away or sell or whatever?
No, they were all for me. I just laid one down throughout the plastic bed. And
Princess of the pillow.
You put a floppy disk under it. Ken can tell you what's on it.
Well, that's Choplifter.
No, it was a pillow top bed. It was very comfortable.
Oh. Kevin, what's been your favorite?
The awesome people is for sure. Seeing people that I only see once in a while. I love hanging out with Jason Scott, and I love seeing Ken, and I get to meet awesome people like Quinn, and so that's the number one thing for sure. But I love seeing like just the crazy stuff people manage to get Apple IIs to do. I mean, that it's stuff that I would and could never do, but then when you see like someone create a rocket launcher and connected to their Apple II. And it was like a 9-year-old kid who did it with his dad. Yeah. Awesome. And then Quinn like buys a couple of 6502 chips and goes, I'm going to build a computer now. And then friggin' does it. Like out of nothing. Just like out of like, I don't know, paper straws.
Sounds
crazy
when you say it like that. So many years.
And then I got to build something. I went to Vince Briel's like project and where you can like build one of his kit computers, and I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna build this thing. And then I have barely ever soldered before, and then I sat there for like literally 7 hours, and when I was done I had a working little 6502 based super board with a keyboard and everything, and I only needed like my hand like held 3 times, and Vince only needed to like cuddle me and you know, stop me from sobbing once. So it was awesome. I got to do this thing, and so I could keep going, but it's been fun.
I have a question, Kevin. You being on Antic, you're going to be known more to be an Atari fellow.
Yes,
I'll say it. I'm willing to say it.
This is a safe space.
Kansas Fest is very much an Apple II oriented conference.
Yes.
Do you find it is it welcoming? Is it accessible? Is it like, why are you here?
Okay. It was until that moment.
Intonation again.
It's all about the intonation.
Yes, the Atari 800 is definitely my first love. Honestly, I came here last year, was my first time, and I came because there is no Atari conference. And I decided to slum it with the next best thing.
Maybe there's a reason there's no Atari conference.
Maybe you're just not invited.
I'm just asking questions.
You're not afraid, is it?
20 butt losers.
There is an Atari party, though.
There's an Atari party.
We haven't had a party yet.
And then I found that the people here were absolutely brilliant and welcoming and ready to, you know, be friends with and share the experience even with an Atari person. And I'm certainly glad I came back. And I will try to come again next time.
Didn't buy any of the Jason Scott slides, all said Boo Atari on them.
it's a little bit like 800, right? So maybe you can just sort of think of it as Atari.
Right.
It's fine. It was like find Waldo. It was like find the Boo Atari on
them. He had to say that. He's at an Apple conference.
Yeah.
We should see what he says at the Atari conference. Yeah. When he gets
He's just working the crowd. That's all he can do.
That's right. Pandering. That's all he does.
Steve, how about you?
Oh, well, this is probably I think it's the 7th or 8th time I've had a chance to be here. I've been not as many times as Tony, who's been to every one, but I was in 94, and then next half time after that was not until after the 2000s and 2003 when WAS came, and I've come intermittently since then, consistently over the last several years, and it's just we've had just better and better keynote speakers. I came enjoying the chance to listen to Margaret Comstock of Soft Talk magazine, see what she had to say. I was a big fan of the magazine. It's just you know, if I could be a fanboy of something that's not the Apple II, it would be that magazine. It was just wonderful, and it was great hearing what she had to say about the days of starting it, because it was such an influential magazine in its day. So that was good to hear, and like I said, listening to Jason talking about the things he's doing with running an emulator for video games or an Apple II or whatever right in your web browser so that you can just load up a program and run it right there without having to actually have the computer or even have a real emulator loading or on your computer is amazing. So and as was mentioned, the camaraderie, you get to see the people that you know again, getting to hear these talks about A2 Cloud and A2 Server and Apple II Pi hardware, things that go on an Apple II that lets you do things that nobody would have imagined they could have done 35 years ago.
Good answer. Good answer.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
All right. Well, I guess it's my turn. I'm going to say a lot of the same things that you guys already said, but the Internet Archive with Jason Scott was really, really cool, really interesting. I wasn't aware of all the things that he does there and all the great stuff that he's doing. And you know, that was extremely interesting. Apple II development with Carrington, I thought that was a very interesting session.
You're welcome.
I missed that session. Can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Basically, he taught us how with five little keystrokes to create a program and run it on your Apple II emulator. Create a C program and run it on your Apple II emulator.
So, nice.
Yeah. Very nice. Now I'm going to try to take what you've done and adapt it for the Atari, but you know, thanks for the leg up there.
So Randy, let me turn around to you and ask you the same question that Kevin was subjected to earlier. You know, are you primarily an Apple guy, and if not, why are you here?
I don't know that I'm primarily anything. I mean, with floppy days, I try to talk about all the various computers. Atari is probably, if I had to rank them, that would be my first, you know, first choice. But I always wanted to own an Apple II, and when I finally got to own one, you know, I wanted to learn more about it, and this conference just sounded amazing. And as Kevin said, there isn't anything like this for the Atari. So I called in a few favors and got my wife to agree to me coming, so I may never get to come again, but hey, I made it this year. I also enjoyed the sessions on all the Pi-based stuff. I'm really interested in the Apple Pi, or I'm sorry, the Raspberry Pi. So the A2 Cloud, A2 Server stuff, and the Apple II Pi by David Schmink are all, you know, really interesting stuff. The Jungle Adventure that you did, Ken, I know that's not really Apple-related in particular, but it was fun. And I didn't get to finish it because I went to Carrington session, but...
Hear that, Ken? Because of the multiple tracks we were having.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And explain
yeah, can you explain that? Because it was
yeah.
One of my favorite
tracks. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, why don't you talk about that?
Sure. I just told John about this for the Retro Maccast, so you may be hearing this again, but I ran a game called Jungle Adventure, which is a Parsley adventure created by Jared Sorensen of Memento Mori Theatrics. And it's basically a text adventure where the parser is replaced with a human being. So I memorize an entire script and map of what items are where and what they do, and then I subjected the audience to this game by asking them for two-word commands like go north, get lamp, and by trying to keep track in my head of where they are and what's happening, I tell them the response or the results of their command. So I'll tell them what they see when they look at something, what it looks like, what's in their inventory, where the exits are. And we spent about an hour going through this jungle adventure. We had only budgeted an hour, but it ended up taking more than that. So about 10 of us retreated to another room to continue the game. And after about another 45 minutes, we did complete the adventure with a score of 85 out of 100. I had done a Parsley adventure 4 years ago at Kansas Fest. That one was called Action Castle. This one was called Jungle Adventure. I have three more scripted at home that I can memorize and bring back to K-Fest.
and I look forward to doing that.
Fantastic. I loved it.
I think the neat thing about it is you have a room full of people, and every person gets one turn at a command in order.
Even if they really like to go over bridges.
Or we don't always agree. Like, you go south, the next person go north.
The next person go south. Yeah, right. So you kind of, you need to talk to the people around you and try to collaborate and form ideas as a group, and you know, it's a lot of fun.
I was impressed with your ability to keep everything in mind. Like, you actually were an excellent parser, because we're all looking at maps we're making, and you just had to stand there and know where we were. And I got the moment it hit me that what you were doing was very impressive is when we restored a save game. I had to go back and say, okay, you're at this point. Here's your inventory, and I was like, wow, well done, Ken. Anyway, I was actually very impressed with your presentation.
There's a lot of improv involved, which is not my strong suit. I've done a lot of community theater. I work best off a script. But the written text adventure cannot anticipate all the strange commands an audience might throw at the parser. Mm-hmm. So there were some things where I had to think on my feet, and I hope I did well enough.
Ask Ken about parsley.
Parsley, Ken doesn't know anything about parsley.
I don't see a Ken here.
I hate parsley.
So to finish up, you know, I just thought it was great to be able to meet and put faces to a lot of people. Ken, you and I had talked before, and Carrington, you and I had talked, and Paul, I knew your voice pretty well, and Steve, you and I had done a podcast together, but I hadn't met any of you in person, so it was great to finally put faces to names. And everybody has been great, and I got to meet some other well-known people in the community, like Jason Scott and Ivan Drucker, Vince Brill, and you know, many, many others. So definitely that was one of the highlights of the show for me. Ken, how about you?
Well, before I tell you some of my favorite sessions, I want to give you some background with the mindset I came into K-Fest with. For the last 7 K-Fest, I've been covering the event for Computer World. For 5 of the last 8 K-Fest, I covered it for Juice GS. For 11 of the last 12, I was marketing director helping to run the event on site. And for the last 3, I was helping cover it for Open Apple. I came into this K-Fest with none of those responsibilities. So this is the first K-Fest I've had like that since I was probably in college, which was longer ago than you think. And it's been really relaxing. Mike pointed out last year that I'm a lot easier to get along with when I have no responsibilities. So I hope that's been true, and I hope this has been as much fun for everybody as it has been for me, because I've had a lot of fun just being able to sit back and go to the session. If I don't want to go to the session, that's okay, but I do because I love the sessions and I love the people. It's been great seeing everybody. I have often seen Mike in Denver prior to Kansas Fest. I see Paul in Boston all the time. Kevin and Jason Scott have both been guest speakers in the class I teach at Emerson. I bumped into Steve in Omaha at least once, I think. And, you know, I've spoken to Randy for his Floppy Days podcast, and I've been on Retro MacCast, and
I had lunch with you on Saturday.
That's right. I saw you in Chicago this past Sunday with...
Oh, Sunday.
With, Poop. What was the name of the person we had to
lunch with? We're going to have to edit that one out.
I'm sorry. Is this a clean podcast?
Not anymore.
Anyway, we'll get back to that. And Quinn, I've never met you. I'm happy to meet you. Thank you. Welcome to the community.
Yeah, you're welcome for meeting me.
Why, thank you.
No, it's me, Joel, of course.
But no, it's...
Jack.
Jack Rubin. We finally got to meet Jack Rubin, who I've been emailing with for years. Sorry it took me a moment to remember his name. Thank you, Carrington. But now that I'm here, I would like to point out some of the great things I've enjoyed, which is the vast number of first-timers we've had. Like, more than a dozen people. Mm-hmm. Last year was the first K-Fest I remember having ever attended where I didn't meet everybody. Like, people went home, and I'm like, who was that guy? Mm-hmm. And I really didn't like that. So I made it more of a point this year to go out my way and say hello to everybody. I think I have successfully met everybody, including Ivan and Andrew Hogan, the son and father pair, mm-hmm. who were here for the rocket launching session. Only Ivan's name was on the schedule, so I was kind of surprised when his father had so much to say. But I thought it was great that they were able to collaborate like that. Andres Lozano gave a presentation this morning about a gentleman who has done art using the Apple II, which is pretty cool. Quinn, I previously mentioned, Mark Pilgrim, who every time I hear his name, I think of Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I just want to, you know, get in a fight with him.
No, he's the best fighter in the province.
There is. That's true.
But I have been emailing with him for a couple of years, and he is going to be writing an article for JuiceJS about his awesome session about emulation detection, which has the MESS world up in a tizzy. They didn't realize that you can tell from within the emulator if you are running in an emulator. Like, you can tell if you're on the holodeck or in the Matrix. And they don't like that because it's supposed to be authentic. Computer and program.
Jason Scott said they've already patched it. They're so furious about it.
It is really
We've created
really
an arms race. I mean, literally, the AI has created a emulation detection arms race.
That's right.
That started yesterday.
I mean, Mark Pilgrim will probably figure out a way to detect if the emulator has been patched to not be detectable.
That's not random enough.
This will happen. As previously mentioned, I had to miss Carrington's session due to Jungle Adventure, for which I regret, but I did get to attend Jason's session this morning. He's a very dynamic speaker, and he had only a half an hour, so he didn't waste any time going over the awesome emulation that he has with JSMS, which is JavaScript, not Jason Scott. Who knew?
Yeah.
And he still found time to say Boo Atari at least twice.
But he did let me take a picture of that slide. He raced through that as quickly as he could. That session was supposed to be tomorrow. He swapped with Martin Hay, who's doing the Lawless Legends presentation.
Right.
I'm really looking forward to that. I'm sorry we don't get to talk about that tonight. Ivan's A2 Cloud and A2 Server was awesome. He meant to do that last year, and he hit some bugs along the way that end up being showstoppers. So he had a year to fix them, and he did, and now it's awesome. And Peter Neubauer's session on AppleTalk networking was a good complement to that. The two of them just showed different ways that you can share files across networks that you didn't know the Apple II could be a part of. I think Ivan used his Apple II to put a file on a server, and then we were all able to download it during that same session. And I missed something. What was it that Dagan did? Did he hack the network?
He uploaded like three files. One that says like Dagan rules. And
yeah.
So was the
Dagan overrated or something?
I put that one up.
Oh, you did that.
I looked in there and he put up Dagan rocks, Dagan rules. Dagan is awesome, so I put in Dagan's overrated.
So probably Ivan should have made that folder read only.
Yeah, probably.
Probably so. Okay.
Live and learn. So. Well, it's been a great Kansas Fest. I love that we have, 60 to 70 people here this year. Mm-hmm. I was here when there were only 28 people. And, upward is not the direction you think an Apple II conference would go. But there it is. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Ken. John? It's your first one, right?
Yeah, this is my first one, and I have gotten very little sleep this week in the best way possible.
I heard snoring during one of the
That wasn't me. That was not me. What can I say? If
it's not because the session was boring. It's just because it's been such a 4 week. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If I could have picked a first Kansas Fest to come to, it sounds like this was a fantastic one for my first one. All the events have been great. I never realized how much connectivity there was a possible between the Apple II and the current computer world. The Apple II Pi, the inception, movie inception of computers. You've got an Apple II with another computer inside it that can emulate another computer inside of there. You can access them all, and then you can access from the outside and pretend it's the computer you're on. And it's just like, what is the top spinning? Is the top still spinning? That's all I wanted to know. The live action text adventure was fantastic. It was so much fun. What else can I say? It's all been a wonderful, fuzzy, happy blur.
Aww. Kind of like you.
All right, Quinn?
Well, I'm also a newbie, my first time. The specific talks, my favorites are most of the same ones that have been mentioned, but I'll echo that it really has been about the people. I mean, the people in this room, for example, this is a little surreal for me because I'm avid listeners of all these podcasts, so all your voices are in my head all the time, and hearing those voices come out of all of your faces is extremely odd. I'm slowly adapting. Literally a couple times a week, one of you is talking in my head while I'm doing something. So
sorry.
You have no idea how sorry we are.
I came, for the tech nostalgia, and I was surprised pleasantly by the people. The case in point for me was word got out I was looking for an Apple IIc Plus, and within 6 hours of me setting foot in the building, one appeared in my hand, and I'm not even entirely sure where it came from. So whoever that was, thank you. I think it came from Sean Fahey, but I don't exactly know. Luckily I was able to get back a little bit. I helped Ian repair his 2C Plus with some parts I happen to have, so I felt good about that. I'll mention one session, Sarah's Make Your Own Ornament session. Shout out for that, because that was fantastic. I learned how to cross-stitch, or I'm not sure exactly if that's the right name for that activity, but we got to make little Apple IIe ornaments, which is adorable. My brain has just been melted by what people are doing with these things. I mean, that, you know, we just came out of a session where David Schmink was running GSOS on an Apple II Plus, and he had a contractor in India logged into his Apple II, and in writing code in the mini assembler from India. It was inception. It was computers inside computers, and it was hard to follow towards the end of what all he was doing. So that was nuts. And Jason Scott, I mean, obviously always entertaining. He hammered out that session. His passion for archiving this stuff is really contagious, and he's a joy to listen to. And I like his emphasis on the culture is what we're preserving, not the stuff. So he gets more excited by finding someone's weird old home videos, or in the context of this conference, finding that AppleSoft Basic program you wrote when you were 6. That's what he wants to preserve. We've all got copies of Choplifter, but he wants to preserve the weird stuff that's going to get lost if we don't catch it. So, the whole thing has been amazing, except possibly the showers. It would be nice if the bathrooms had been labeled. There was some moments there until everyone agreed which ones were which. Otherwise, it's been great. I'll be back next year.
Kevin, I think it's a high compliment what conferences people have chosen not to be at in order to be here. Jason was invited to a digital library convention, and he's not there. Brian Weiser is not at Comic-Con,
right.
which is the
astounding.
Same time as Kansas Fest. What's that?
It's astounding.
Yeah.
That's a huge
And that's always what previously used to stop Brian Weiser from coming here. Mm-hmm. For years and years, he always said that he wanted to come to Kansas Fest and couldn't. And then 2 years ago, there was no conflict. 1 year ago, there was no conflict. This year, there is a conflict, but he just went for the hat trick, and he's back.
Mike, how about you?
Usually when I come to Kansas Fest, I have a list of tech problems that either I'm not able to solve on my own or that I just don't have time to get to, and I can bring the equipment here and be with really smart people who can help me solve these problems immediately. I don't have to wait for email or even instant messaging or Carrington's mocking texts when I post something. I can get the help that I need, and this year I left at home in the garage a box of vital equipment, so most of the computers that I brought I can't use. And so it's forced me to kind of go and find other things to do and be social and hang out and talk more than I normally would, and that's been a really enriching and rewarding experience for me, because I'm not a really social person most of the time. If I can avoid icky things like personal talk and small talk and hearing details about people's lives, I do that. I've sort of been forced to hack that problem by hanging out with people and having a really good time. So that's been, I think, the greatest experience for me this year. Of course, the sessions are all great, and I love going into sessions not really knowing what they're about and seeing and being wowed by cool surprises that I never would have thought possible. And it amazes, I've been coming since 2005, and it amazes me that I keep being able to have these wow moments over and over again, and they're not just repetitions of what happened last year. So
I just realized that even though I'm the youngest person here, I'm the person who's been coming the longest.
Yeah.
Kansas Fest keeps you young.
This is my 17th K-Fest.
17th,
yeah,
wow.
It's the 10th one at this venue at Rockhurst. So I went for 7 years at Avila and 10 years here.
Did you say that when you come next year, you will have been coming half your life?
Yep, because next year will make my 18th, and I'll be 36 years old. So my first 18 years were K-Fest free, and the 18 years since then, yep.
Wow.
So how much are we getting paid for this 45-minute commercial for KFAN?
Not enough.
We got pizza.
Well, but do you want to go around quickly and talk about what could be improved, what could be changed, what wasn't great? Then
no,
could,
it's all perfect.
No, it's not perfect. Like, no,
Let's try it. We can always edit it.
Water pressure is always kind of crappy, and this year I think it was worse. There were some facility problems.
Did you say water pressure?
Water pressure.
I don't know what hours you're
using. There's some construction going on, so we were bounced out of the cafeteria we normally go to, and we've been eating downstairs in like a lounge thing, and I think the food has suffered.
Food
because the food is
terrible.
And usually not.
I agree, but in return it'll be awesome next year.
It'll be the same food.
We'll have a new cafeteria.
It'll still be those same biscuits.
I think it's mostly monotonous. It wasn't that it was necessarily
there weren't a lot
bad,
of
it's just monotonous.
Especially for us vegetarians.
As Kevin had said, the beds are not great for us old people. Like, it's the world's worst mattress. It's just like...
And it's not like it's real. That part's really much different than it's been in the past. Somehow, in spite of the beds and the showers, we keep coming back.
And we don't spend a lot of time sleeping.
I also want to clarify that Rockhurst, compared to our former host of Avila, is really quite good. The staff here is very accommodating and very friendly, and I think they do the best that they can.
Yeah.
You know, there happens to be the bad timing of us being here with the construction, but the construction has to happen, and for a school, the summer is the time to do it.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I suppose there's one thing you can say is, it's terrible, and yet all the time before this was spent saying, this was a great conference, we all loved it, it was fantastic.
Oh, we all have Stockholm Syndrome. There are some things that aren't great about it. I love it. Without hesitation, I'm coming next year. I'm coming every time they do it. I love this conference. Yeah. It doesn't mean it's
bring
perfect.
Inflatable bed.
Right. It can always be improved. Yeah. I want it to keep improving and get better and better.
It's not the Hyatt, but it's really cool.
And also consider that I've been to professional conferences where the registration fee is $2,000, and then you're paying for hotel and food on top of that.
Yeah.
We're paying $400, and that gets us everything.
And of course, here we're also asked adorable questions like, what's an Apple II?
Yes.
I just had a fellow sit in my room for about a half an hour. He was walking by dropping off a power supply he had borrowed from another attendee. And so he wanted to bring it back. Wasn't sure what room that person was in. All the doors were shut. He found my door open, ducked in, saw the Apple II, said, what's that? Sat on the bed, and he wanted to know, well, is this the hard drive? I said, no, that's where the floppy drive is. He wanted to know, well, how does a floppy drive talk to the computer? This is a fellow who just graduated with a bioengineering degree. He's been off to med school.
Wow.
And he was really interested, but absolutely had no idea what a floppy drive was, none of that. So we did a quick review of old computers.
Yeah, I've talked to that student conference assistant. His name is Christian. He asked great questions. He's very curious.
Yeah.
He was returning a micro USB cable he borrowed from a mouse, I think.
Is there any sort of way that, you know, the students that are here to like do like an open house, like use, you know, have a couple hours set up where people set up, we set up our systems, have the students come in, look at the stuff?
Yes. In fact, on Saturday, which is our vendor fair, about 3 or 4 years ago, we expanded that to include an exhibit hall. So people who don't have anything to sell but do have stuff to show can set up. Ostensibly, the exhibit hall is open to the public, and we do have a couple of local Kansas City attendees come just to look at stuff.
Nice.
But we don't do a very good job advertising it, and to get into the building, they still need a key card.
Oh, okay.
So usually the locals just end up knocking on the door until somebody lets them in. So I don't know how they're even finding out about it or how they're getting into the building, but I wish there were more of them. Because I've actually made Juice GS sales to locals who were not registered to Kansas Fest and just came to the exhibit hall.
Nice.
And we should advertise that to the Rockhurst students, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like some sort of
start putting up flyers.
Pan-generational educational opportunity.
Right, yeah.
And I want to point out, as much as we're talking about the college dorm and the food and blah, 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 you know, again, comparing it to going to a conference at a hotel, what you absolutely would not get at a hotel is the fact that these are people who can decorate the door, and the doors are open as you walk down the hall, and you can step in and talk to somebody. And frankly, at a hotel, I wouldn't want to do that.
I've tried that. No, they don't appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly.
What you doing?
but you could get that kind of camaraderie at a hotel kind of conference because it doesn't work out. In a dorm like this, it just works out. It's like college days, and you feel like you're back in college days, and it actually is a great experience. It's a kind of experience you couldn't do any other way than the way they've chosen to do it here.
Yeah, my friends don't understand that Kansas Fest is not a 9-to-5 conference. It's 24/7 or 24/6.
Label the bathrooms, that's all I ask.
Well, that's a good point.
That it was a serious snafu about that.
All right, well, I think we've got some fun planned.
Yeah.
Kevin, you want to kick it off here?
Sure, we're going to play a game. And
it's called Special Places.
It's we're going to play a game. The game is called Two Truths and a Lie. And here's how it works. We are going to go around, and we're going to each tell three things about ourselves. Two of them are absolutely true, and one of them is a lie. And the rest of the group tries to guess which thing is the lie.
Do we keep score or anything like
that? No, it's just for fun. Okay. And, you know, I think it's okay for the group to ask some follow-up questions, like follow-up questions, and, you know... So, of course, you know, we're telling you three things. You try to come up with two things that are true but seem like they couldn't be. For instance, one of my true things is I might say I got my first computer by stealing it from a church raffle, which is true. And you wouldn't, you know, think so unless you read my book, so I'm not going to use that one. But so that's the game, Two Truths and a Lie. Who would like to go first?
I nominate you, Kevin.
Yeah.
All right.
Why don't you go first?
All right. Okay. This is my Kevin's Bad Decisions edition of Two Truths and a Lie. Number one, in 1994, under pseudonym, I wrote a book called NetSex, The Complete Guide to the Adult Side of the Internet. Number two, Bill Gates once called me an idiot. Number three, I spent my 20th wedding anniversary at Kansas Fest.
So... once.
Oh. Yeah, that's what makes it false.
It's not like I, you know, talk to him every day. I only talked to him once and he called me an idiot at that time.
Okay.
Well, I know the third one is true. Because last year you said you couldn't come back this year because it would be your 20th anniversary. Mm. And then you mentioned it again this week.
Right.
But even if you had mentioned it this week, I would remember it from last year.
Yeah.
So number one is eviction. Is that what we'd say?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you did work for AOL. You were like their guru. But I think I sometimes confuse you with John Scalzi, who I think was actually like AOL.
I do that too.
Because I think he was like a love columnist for AOL or something back in like the late 90s, early 2000s.
Really? Yeah. I do enjoy the fact that we're like, okay, Bill Gates could have interacted with him and maybe called him an idiot. Or it's plausible he wrote that net sex. We're not all just
you believe any of that, right?
My truth is interesting. I'm going to go with the net sex because you're not John Scalzi.
I'm going to think number two is the Bill Gates.
Yeah, I think you wrote the net sex.
Put your hands up if you think it's the sex book.
That works well on an audio podcast.
I think it's one of
most people.
Good radio right there.
And
I think you wrote the
maybe two and a half for the Bill Gates thing. The lie is Bill Gates. He never called me an idiot. I did co-write under pseudonym NetSex, the complete guide to the adult society in 1994. It's available on Amazon. It was written by Candy Rose and Dirk Thomas.
So we now know your porn name.
Is that like your pet in the street you grew up on?
Oh, wow. I know.
Yeah, right. No.
I've worked with you over a year now, Kevin. I didn't know this.
So Bill Gates doesn't know you're an Atari guy then, right?
No, he doesn't know I'm an idiot.
He would have gone out of his way to call you.
Has he ever had the opportunity to call you an idiot?
No.
Okay.
But I had a whole backstory plan in case you guys asked, but now you guys aren't going to hear it.
Oh.
Who would like to go next?
Paul, no fair rewriting.
Paul? Paul, how about you?
I could go.
Okay.
Okay, so three things that, two of which are true and one is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I have to randomize these from the order that I wrote them in. When I first got my first...
The fact that you put this is a lie in the show notes.
No, there's no hint in the show notes. But, So when I first got my Apple II as a kid, we got the Apple II and no working monitor that worked with it. So I sat and programmed blind, a program that would beep at me feedback. That's one. When I was in, I think this was junior high, there was a computer lab. They were all networked with Corvus cards, and they all had little login screens. I wrote a program that I ran on all of the things that looked like the login screen, but they were interconnected so that when I hit, I think there was something I typed on one of them, and they would all start to whine, a very high-pitched whine, and annoy the lab guy. A People magazine was delivered to my family home twice, 30 years apart. Once in 1984 and once in 2014.
Like the same issue?
Yes. The very same issue. Those are my three things.
Well, I've done similar things to the first two you mentioned, so I'm going to have to say the third one.
But the People magazine is so weird.
It's got to be true. It's so weird, it's got to be true.
Even at the, I was going to say what year is this.
How would you even make that up?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I guess this is maybe, we don't know.
And Paul's certainly not that creative.
Paul, I can imagine that you could code blind. Okay.
I don't think you'd have a monitor, not have a monitor, and know even what you were doing trying to type on it. I think that's got to be.
I could see what's happening. The families, this one TV or whatever, the family's watching Greatest American Hero or whatever you did that back then, and you know, I want to use the computer, so you're right.
But you could just print a control G or whatever. Like, it could be a very simple basic program you're reading on a magazine.
But if it's your first computer, you don't even know what it does when you turn it on. Is there a prompt? You don't even know.
And my mom would not let me take my 2E with me. The people we were there with had their 2E but didn't have a monitor cable, and I did a program blind and saved it. So
after that experience, you knew,
really?
You knew
yes.
what you knew what it was
yes.
doing
behind
right.
so and it worked.
Right.
I don't buy it. The beeping is fiction.
What'd you say?
The beeping one is fiction.
The Corvus
number two.
I think it's the Corvus one.
I think it's the Corvus one as well, which I know is the least weird of them. I'm gonna go with Corvus one is my guess.
Okay, so how do we do this? Do we count? Do we vote?
Yeah,
I just tell you.
Let's vote.
All right.
Okay. Do I vote?
Or who votes for Corvus Wine being the false one?
Me.
We're doing
show some hands on our microphone.
I'm counting for the terrible radio.
Yeah. Terrible.
That's our slogan.
Retro radio.
Do you have a better
retro
way to do it?
Let's
just discuss it and reveal it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what we think.
Who votes? So the false one was actually, it was a Newsweek magazine. I found a bunch of stuff at my parents' house, and I shipped it. I was gonna have it shipped back to myself. It was so this was like old bank statements and magazines that seemed interesting and something like that. And I put them in a box. Turned out the bottom of the box was not particularly well sealed, and so partway through, everything re-entered the mail stream. and Newsweek showed up again, a 1984 Newsweek in 2014.
That's amazing.
It was very strange.
It's amazing. Nice.
Changing the name of the magazine, not cool.
Sorry. I was having a hard time coming up with
nice.
The whole thing.
Nice.
Randy, you want to go next?
Sure. Okay. First one, I have a bachelor's degree in nuclear engineering. Secondly, my first computer was an Atari 800. The third one is I have 20 acres in Montana.
Montana? Now I know you just changed one of the layout.
I think number two is false because you're such an openly Atari guy, and often people's favorite computer is not their first one.
Yeah.
I seem to recall you having mentioned both the nuclear engineering and the Montana acres.
Okay.
So I think the Atari one is so boring.
I know.
Congratulations.
I know that he has acreage in Montana.
But is it 20?
For all I know, it could be 19.2.
Exactly.
We can pull a People magazine on
it. Apparently that's what we're doing here.
The line.
I would say it's number two. I would say it's something other than Atari 800.
I agree.
Yeah.
You guys must listen to my podcast.
I don't.
Ouch. My first computer was a Terrace 80 Model 1.
Yeah, we know you too well.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Ken, you're next.
Okay. So here are, a couple of truths and a lie, not necessarily in that order. One, I can play Pac-Man and Q-Bert blindfolded. Two, the only Apple II print publication I've ever subscribed to is just GS. 3, I currently work at a school that rejected my application to study there.
3, I believe.
And I think it would not surprise me if the only Apple II you have is juice because you're just such a kid.
But at the same time, I also can play every video game ever made blindfolded. I can't play it well, but I can play them.
There's some adverbs missing there.
Yeah, so... Like, I don't think you get into a kill screen blindfolded. In which case, awesome.
In which case, Billy Mitchell wants to talk to you.
I don't know.
My wife, I was saying this before the show, my wife has a story where she had Atari 2600 Pac-Man, and she got so good at it, she started playing it with her feet. And then she could still, you know, get to level 10 or something.
It was love at first sight.
Absolutely.
You saw her playing with that joystick with her feet. And you're like, will you marry me?
Must be a clean podcast textbook.
You're getting really close to home there.
Yeah. The thing is,
is that because you're playing footsie? Or?
That's the name of the game.
It's late, I'm sorry.
The problem is, Ken is so good at video games, I do believe you
saw me playing
the ball well blindfolded.
I think number 3 is the falsehood.
Yeah. I'm gonna guess it's the Juice GS one. Then you never actually subscribed to another magazine.
I pirated them, that's right.
Well, no, you could have just bought them. I don't know. I'm guessing.
I think 2 is fiction because I don't think you'd have a subscription to Juice GS because you worked there forever. I think you just get them for free.
You're treating me like I'm still parsing a text adventure trying to read.
Examine Ken.
There's nothing to see here. Move along.
So what's everybody
I thought you told me on the interview that I did with you that you were working at the school that you went to.
You don't listen to your own podcast. I think we're divided here.
All right,
what's the answer?
You'll never know.
Tune in to the next year.
So there's no vote on this one?
Okay, we're voting. I am voting, it's number 2, that it's a lie that the only Apple II print publication you've ever subscribed to is Juice GS. One of those things, you're either not subscribed now, you never subscribed, I don't know, something in there is not real.
I'm going with the blindfold thing.
I think the blindfold is wrong.
I think the magazine.
Yeah,
I think it's the school.
The magazine.
So we all unanimously you do think school. I'm going to say, the only thing we agree on is Ken was rejected.
Okay, well, I'll tell you definitely one of the truths is the only Apple II print publication I've ever subscribed to is Juice GS.
Oh, wow.
I did subscribe to Soft Disk, but that was on floppy disks. So that's why I put print publication.
Semantics.
When you said I'm a kid, that's true. I was too young to have the sort of, you know, leisure funds to invest in a print publication. I didn't really know about Soft Talk or Nibble or Insider or A+. I was not really a member of the Apple II community until the early 90s when I got on CompuServe. And by that point, a lot of the print pubs for the Apple II were fading away. Shall I continue with the other 2?
Yeah,
please.
There is some semantic wiggle room with these other 2. I currently work at a school that rejected my application to study there. Well, my day job is at MIT, and I went to a very similar school just a few miles away called WPI, Worcester Polytechnic Institute. They are often considered rivals. It would make total sense that I applied to one, couldn't get in, so I went to their rival. But I did not apply to MIT. This lie or truth applies to my night job teaching at Emerson College, which I also studied at. I graduated from there and now teach there, but they rejected my first application. I applied to grad school and to Computer World at the same time. I got into Computer World, and Emerson said, no, thank you.
So I was half right.
So yeah. The next year, I applied to Emerson again, and then I got in.
So you can play Pac-Man and Q-Bert blindfold?
No, I just told you 2 and 3 are true.
I couldn't even really follow what you're saying. I'm still not sure which one is true.
Carrington, if you want to take it literally, the number 1 is also true. I can play it blindfolded, as can anybody. I just don't play it very well. However, I did mean that I can, you know what I'm doing. It's implied in that statement that I can actually play it well.
And the things that you said, nothing can be implied.
The truth behind number 1 is that I have 3 older brothers, and this statement is true of my oldest brother. He had some high records when he was a kid. He could walk into an arcade, put a single quarter in, and play Pac-Man or Q-Bert for like 8 hours at a time. And the arcade operator would only make a single quarter in those 8 hours. So when he walked in, they would actually pay him to play anything but Pac-Man. He was extorting the arcade. You know, like he would rack up so many lies, he'd just walk away to go to the bathroom. He'd have the joystick in one hand, a Big Mac in the other, you know, just sit there for hours.
He's a Hubert wizard.
And yeah, Hubert and Pac-Man, because they were all pattern-based games. If you do the same thing, the enemies will react the same way every time. There's no randomness.
Hubert was pattern-based.
But I cannot do those things. So that is the lie. I cannot play Pac-Man and Hubert blindfolded.
Okay.
Mike, would you like to go next?
Okay. In high school, I received a contract offer from Origin Systems based on an RPG that a friend of mine and I wrote together. He later went on to form the OneRing.net, the premier Lord of the Rings internet website for many years. I was once kicked out of a museum for reprogramming the Apple IIs that were running their children's hands-on exhibits. And I received a commendation from the Commandant of the Marine Corps for improving their problem reporting system for helicopter pilots.
That's true.
Number two is true.
He was in the Marines.
I believe the third one.
But that could be the detail that makes this
right.
Thing. That's true.
And the first one was awfully detailed. Right. If we took the time, we could look that up and verify.
In order of words about it, because the second one, he said children's hands-on museum, not vice versa.
Hands-on children. So,
that's why you got kicked out of the
pre-program. I have to go knock on doors when I move into new neighborhoods.
I'm going to go with number two, the museum.
Is true or false?
False. That's a lie, in my opinion. But
I think he did reprogram the computers at the Sheldon's Museum.
I think so, too. I'm going to go with one.
He might not have gotten kicked out. I think Mike is so good that they never would have noticed, and I don't think they would have kicked him out.
Oh, he probably did it, but didn't get
kicked out. He did a good job reprogramming them.
Right, I mean, he got a commendation for reprogramming things.
That was the difference between the time parts.
Number one is awfully specific.
I'm going with the museum thing as the false one, too.
I'm going with number one as the false one because it's specific enough. I think it's one of those Paulisms where it's, it wasn't Origin, it was just us.
It happened to my brother.
I think number one is not true, but the other two are true.
Yeah, that's my vote, too.
Or, you know, maybe he got a contract from Newsweek.
We were 30 years apart.
Okay, what's
all right, what is it?
The second one is false.
Yes! I win!
Sounds like something you do, though.
Did you do anything like that? Where'd that come from?
Not the hands-on children part. The part.
So did you got a contract offer from Origin?
Yes, my friend and I wrote part of an RPG, and we sent the code to Origin on a disc, and they immediately sent us a contract.
And what happened to that contract?
And my parents said, absolutely not. There's no way you're doing this. You are staying in school and focusing on your grades. And you can think about doing this after high school.
At the point when you're allowed to play, you know, video games with devils on them.
Right. Exactly. So Working was the company that did Ultima and things that. That was, for my parents, that was evil.
Oh.
Yeah. I used to go to the Museum of Science and Industry in Los Angeles, and there was this one exhibit that had Apple II Cs, I think, and I don't remember what the exhibit was, but there were like screens of the other, and it was just like at the bottom of one of the screens, it was just like programmed by Billy and Dave. This is not the museum's program. It was just like, you go, Billy and Dave. You wrote a program, convinced the museum to show it, and then give yourself credit in this computer that's like behind a lockbox where people can't see it.
Nice.
Awesome. It's like awesome. Forgot about that until just now.
Who is next? Carrington, why don't you go next?
Oh, me, okay. yes, just, I hate you and I hate you. Which one is the one?
I don't believe
those are all true.
Okay, so my three are as follows. When I was a kid, I really wanted to play hockey, as all good Canadian boys want to. My parents insisted that I could not play hockey, could not sign up until I learned to skate, so they enrolled me in figure skating. And I actually was in a kid's ice capade thing. And this is where the retro stuff comes in. I got to dress as a floppy disk that was stolen, this little patch. So I was dressed as a software pirate, as a little kid, in costume, in a children's ice capade. The embarrassment we will talk about on a microphone. Doing figure skating. Number two, I organized an actual attack with multiple people involving a truck. We attacked a homecoming parade, and that time I was dressed as a normal pirate. So these both have piracy in common. And third is, my first, quote, real job, if you can say I've ever held one of those, but my first actual job was ghostwriting.
a programming class that I then subsequently took. So before grade 7, I was employed, wrote software, and wrote a whole class and tests and everything for the North York Board of Education. Subsequently, was enrolled in that class and did particularly well. So those are two true things and one ridiculous thing about me.
I know number two, where you attacked the float, is true. At some point in your life, you have told me that story. And that's not the kind of story I would forget or fabricate.
Number three has got to be true, because Carrington's entire childhood is characterized by low-grade short con.
Yeah, I think one's
big skating too.
Guys,
One.
I'm with everyone. One.
Nobody
who was dressing you would have known what a software pirate was.
Yeah, it's the software pirate detail that's what's wrecked it.
Mike
Carrington.
What's your guess?
I think they're all a lie. I think your entire life is a lie.
True. Okay, you all got it right. Yes, it is the case that I did all of that. Minus the fact that I was a software pirate. I was dressed as a little mouse. I did have to do figure skating. I was at the Escapade, and I was dressed up as a little mouse. Aww. Huge ears.
Give pictures.
Yeah, I really pictures. Pictures. And I had to go out and do
my
little...
pictures?
And it was almost certainly there are pictures.
There will be pictures in the show notes. The only thing that will be in the show notes.
The whole thing, and it was only subsequent to that I was allowed to enroll in.
We want your mother's phone number.
It makes you
give me your phone right now.
All the best hockey players do figure skating.
Sure, yes. Yeah. Yeah, it actually served me quite well.
Usually sounds mouse ears,
yeah.
But...
Yes, that was the...
Wind resistance. Yeah.
So, yeah, but I did actually, yes, that's how I got kicked out of the first university I attended, that I attacked and destroyed most of the homecoming. And I was social commander of a place called the Zoo. We had to build a float. Everyone builds a float, so you rent a flatbed truck and you build a float. I decided a pirate ship would be cool. I decided a tax ship would be even cooler. Paid the truck driver to pull out because we lost float. When we got on the Western Road, and say, why don't you just go to the first? Why don't we try? And as we had sticks and we just attacked float after float and a wave of destruction all the way up the parade. And next year I was at University of Toronto.
And are there pictures?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and everything. So yeah, you can Google it and find lots of photos of destroyed homecoming because of idiots.
It's a profile picture.
And now we can have a new Twitter handle of low-grade shortcut.
And it was the case that my first paying gig, if you listen to Bobby Days, was walking up into the street basically doing a con. I got a real job from a teacher who was employed by Northrop Board of Education. He was supposed to write a logo course. It was all logo and draw little stars and stuff and test people on it. He was a two-door-down neighbor. Didn't know anything about computers, knew that I just had got one somehow. And he was like, that sounds really cool. And he basically paid me to do that, but not tell anybody I had done it. And then I was very surprised when a year and a half later, I was like, well, I'm going to do well on this. Yeah, so that's me.
Wow. Quinn. All right. Number one, I reported a bug in the Super Serial card for the Apple II, and Apple fixed it in the Rev-C card, the Rev-C being the one basically everybody has. Number two, I'm secretly a race car driver. Number three, Richard Lord British Garriott threatened me with legal action.
I don't think you're old enough to have messed around with a serial card, Super Serial card.
So the race car driver and the Lord British.
I'm going for it.
Well, the race car part, you said you're secretly a race car driver, but I think that was pretty evident from having visited your website.
Yeah, but on the most recent Open Apple, she talked about the whole, I want to port Ultima 6. I'm going to go with 7. I'm not looking. But I'm pretty sure it's 6.
Yeah.
And she said, hey, I've developed the engine for that. Can I have all of your IP, please, for free? And they wrote back in no uncertain terms. Who do you think you are? Shut it down. I'm pretty sure that was Ultima. So I think she was threatened by my purchase. She is a race car driver.
They probably did do the serial.
That's not fair. Mike
they probably
and Quinn
fixed it in
of Open B. Apple both send their source code to Origin. One gets a contract, the other gets a lawsuit. That's not fair.
But the thing is, it could
be
a secret.
Lord of the Rings. Hers was based on something they already did.
But she's not secretly, I think you're right, a race car driver. So it could be that one and two are true.
Is this the whole semantic thing again?
Yeah.
I think it's secretly in the fact that she hasn't told us yet.
Yeah.
But I stalked her, so I know these
things. I'd actually believe
if it's on her website, then it's not a secret. Therefore, it's the one.
Well, and perhaps Apple only fixed it in RAM D.
I'm still going to go with serial. Is the lie.
Yeah, I think I will too. But
she's a serial liar.
I'm going to vote for one.
Short con votes one, too.
All right. Yeah, coming up with one that was interesting and plausible and also retro-related was tough. Yeah, number one, fiction. I had nothing to do with anything in the Super Serial card. Yeah, all right, secretly, I'm not playing nonsense theatrical games like everyone else seems to be, so I threw the word secretly in there for color language, but if you want to all obsess over that, that's on you. Yes, one of my other hobbies is racing cars. And yes, I got a very strongly worded cease and desist letter from Origin Systems in response to me asking if I could please port Ultima 6 to the 2GS. I told the whole story on Open Apple, but yeah, the short version is that I built an engine and just needed the artwork and the maps, and in my 15-year-old naivete, I thought, I'll just ask for it and they'll be thrilled, because they
didn't have to... You did
all the work. I wrote all this code, and they'll love it, me for it, and yeah, not so much.
Well, about what you
did
said,
you ever just think about creating your own art and calling it Ultima or something like that?
Ultima with an A?
Well, so I did end up just making my own art, and I never quite finished it on the GS, but then I later ported the engine to the Mac, so there is actually a Mac version of that game, and I made a sequel as well on the Mac.
Wait, where is it
available?
Well, it only ran on early Motorola Macs, so it only runs on Windows 20, 030, 040.
Okay.
You got every Mac
here. I forgot what room I'm in here.
That's not a problem.
So, yeah, I don't. I'll have to dig and find the executable.
Either put it on Macintosh Garden or Mac GUI.
All right. I'll have to dig. There, I've got it somewhere.
Dave Finnegan's site.
Awesome. Yeah. Parents' basement.
Mac GUI.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think I actually have that. Love it. Might even be on the
site.
That's awesome.
Somewhere.
Dr. Steve.
After all these exciting things people have talked about, my choice is actually fairly, you know...
You've had the last hour to read.
Kill the man and see him die.
I was just so entertained by reading all these, I didn't even go back to look at what I put down. Well, I have three things. One of them is that my wife and I keep bees. The second one is that we breed dogs. The two non-computer things, but we do that. And the third thing is that I got my start in computing operating a mainframe by myself.
We like to ask questions. Keep bees from what?
Children's museums.
You breed dogs with bees in their mouths, and when they bark, they shoot bees at you.
Nice. There's a connection between the two, yeah. Okay.
I know one is true. I know you keep bees. Because you gave me some honey at K-Best one
year. Oh, did you?
You brought me a bottle of something like
that's
like,
no, it's just because he does the long con. He gave kids.
3 years from now, I will be asked.
I admire your work.
That's a lot of work for this stupid game.
So when you wonder why I'll give you peanut butter later this weekend, 3 years from now.
Because of that, I'm going to guess the dogs one. I think it's more likely you actually operated a mainframe by yourself than that you're breeding dogs. This is what I'm going
to
get.
I agree.
Yeah. See, I interviewed you for a paper I wrote for school, and I don't remember...
You got your honey.
I don't remember you mentioning operating a mainframe by yourself, but I also know that I've been communicating with you for years, and you've never once mentioned dogs. So I got to say that's the lie.
Dogs.
Did he mention bees?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I've seen pictures of him with his apiary gear. Okay.
Yes.
Throwing dogs at them.
Shooting them from his palms. Oh, wait, that's Bioshock. Never mind.
All right, what's the answer?
I think it's number three.
You think number three?
Oh, you're going to guess three. I think it's the dogs.
I think
dogs.
Yeah. You're no dog breeder.
Okay, well, we have owned dogs ever since we've been married, but it's true we did not breed them.
Ah, okay.
I guess you could say we breed bees. I don't know. They can't just take care of that themselves.
Little tiny candles set the mood.
Nice music.
No, the computer in college, we had this wonderful little IBM mainframe called the IBM 1130, which was easily small enough to fit in smaller than this room, but it had this lovely line printer, card reader, and it was not so busy. It was one in the computer class you could actually take the cards in, run it yourself, make changes, run it yourself again, and other smart people there didn't spend all their time in the computer center like I did. So I could just pick any time when nobody was there, and I could just, I had a little switches I could put in there so I could actually do my programs on the IBM Selectric console there instead of typing all those stupid cards. So I kind of had my own personal computer in college, even though other people came and wanted to use it for things like running grade reports and stuff. But yep, that one's the true one.
John.
All right, mine are nearly as theatrical as some of the ones that I've heard.
The lie is he's speaking with his diaphragm right now. He attacked the parade with beef.
I used to be a bomb disposal specialist. I used to go to an Apple II users group at a Mexican restaurant in Germany.
I think those both have to be true.
I was born with an extra pinky toe.
That's pretty easy to verify.
I didn't say I still had an extra pinky toe.
Or where? That's not a toe.
Hello.
I was born with an extra big toe. Oh, no.
And then it got blown off by a bomb. Because he was really bad at his job.
In a Mexican restaurant.
Written up in People magazine 30 years later.
30 years later.
Because of that, he got his job at Origin.
If you were in the military, one and two could easily be true, because you would have spent time in Germany and could...
Okay, if he had an extra toe, he wouldn't be allowed in the military.
Which might be why the toe
was
not they got removed
when he was a child.
As a doctor, wouldn't you say that if the child was born with an extra toe, they would normally...
They'd probably just...
Right then and
cut
there.
It off right there in the delivery room.
And then they realize they counted wrong.
They needed you to sign the...
I meant command C.
Yeah.
What?
Hmm?
Huh?
How's that?
Come again?
I'm going to vote for the toe.
Yeah, I say the toe.
Weirdly, I also think it's more likely that you are a bomb disposal artist who spent time in a Mexican restaurant in Germany talking about the Apple II. That is... both more likely than you had an extra toe.
But if he grew up with the Apple II, wouldn't he have come to K-Fest sooner?
He couldn't get here because of the toe.
And he was in Germany.
We know the Apple II is the first one for you.
It's the foundation, but he moved on to the Mac, you know, so...
That's where he got stuck.
Stung by the bees.
Okay, so what's the consensus?
When you say bomb disposals, do you mean a little Mac bomb?
He was actually just bomb support.
He just worked in IT. Is that what that means?
I tried turning him off and on again.
It's a really cool way to say
it. It was the toe. I did not have a toe. I did not have an extra toe.
An extra toe?
Yes.
Okay. Wow, bomb disposal.
that's cool.
So I take it you were successful.
I didn't lose any extra toes.
Are you coming to the movies with us tomorrow night?
I'm not.
Because if it sucks, we're going to need you.
4 in the morning. Diffuse the movie.
Will there be bombs there?
Your joke is the only bomb around here, sir. Diffuse that joke.
Why are you my frenemy? Why could I have a better frenemy?
Yes, the surrealness of meeting at a Mexican restaurant in Germany to talk about Apple IIs was
surreal.
Wonderful. Yeah. Great food.
You were there for the food.
The owner of the restaurant was an Apple II user, so that's why we get to use
his
restaurant.
Was he Mexican or German?
He was German.
The food was Mexican. They named the restaurants after the food, Ken. Not the racism.
Holly Gamer, the owner.
Anyway, wow. All about inclusion and diversity.
Alright. Well, this has been a great time.
Alright, yeah, it has been. So, to kind of wrap things up here, can we kind of go around the table and let everyone pitch their podcast and tell us your favorite Apple II application?
I don't do a podcast.
Okay, we know better.
I'm not sure our audience can tell that you're joking, Quinn. I can't tell that you're joking.
So there's been a
cheap
thing.
Sarcasm, officer.
Yes. Quinn has been invited to be in a podcast and is
holding out for more money.
More than zero.
But we are. She's here now because we know she's going to accept / be forced to, you know, be in it.
Nope, I will definitely not be co-hosting Open Apple anytime in the near future.
But no quarter would like to announce.
Okay, so you don't have a podcast, Quinn, but what is your favorite Apple II program?
My favorite Apple II program?
Yep.
Oh, boy.
I was going to say game when I wrote the question, but it doesn't have to be a game.
Yeah. Should we specify a non-game? Or does it not matter?
That doesn't matter. No. Whatever's your favorite application.
You know, I'm gonna say Locksmith, actually. Because in addition to being a nasty little pirate, I was just fascinated by that software and how it worked and how it made magic things happen. And it copied Bard's Tale, the first Bard's Tale. Bard's Tale had something weird about the track 6 where it was impossible to copy with anything. And Locksmith also would not copy it. But for some reason, I didn't know anything about copy protection at the time, and I just kept trying Locksmith, and I just tried to copy it like 60, 70 times. For some reason, like on the 73rd try, it just worked. And to this day, I have no idea why.
It got a read error, but a really lucky one.
Yeah, I don't know if it was one of those track offset things or something, and it got lucky once, but for whatever reason. And then after that, it was always copyable. The copy that I made was then unprotected.
You cracker.
And I felt like a total cracker.
Totally. That's racist.
Wait, that, wow, that came out weird. But yeah, so the Locksmith gets my vote. It was magic to me.
All right. Mike? Solo host of Open Apple.
That's right.
So far.
Who is Open Apple of interest to? As if someone has never heard it before, who wants to?
Nobody. Heard.
Nobody.
No. I co-host No Quarter with Mr. Whitfield Vanston, next to name.
Character Whitfield Vanston.
Whitfield. And I also co-host Drop 3 Inches with Paul.
Which is a new Apple III podcast.
It is. Right. Yes. And favorite Apple II program. Probably had to be the computer's super IOB routine that allowed you to deprotect programs by modifying the read write track sector to copy otherwise uncopyable data.
Started a theme.
Yes, you did.
Dirty pirates. Archon.
I'm gonna go attack a homecoming parade now.
With bees!
Attack it with bees and bombs and dogs. People magazine.
So my name is Carrington. And I am co-host on 3 podcasts regularly, No Quarter, with Mike, Retro Computing Roundtable, with a few various sundry people, and Double Take, which is a movie review podcast I do as well, weekly-ish. Favorite Apple II software, depending on the day you ask me, it would be any of a number of different Infocom games. Text Adventures are my true love. Most recently, which isn't really that recently, I finished The Lurking Horror, and so that looms largest and most enjoyable in my mind. So I'm going to select The Lurking Horror as my current favorite Apple II software.
Carrington, you want to talk about the possible podcast that you're working on?
Sure, yeah. Few have been on the edge of launch for quite a while, and 1 MHz will probably eventually come back. You heard it here first, folks.
every podcast.
We've heard it first a lot of times.
So I have finished now producing a series of podcasts called Podcaster Relay, in which one podcaster A, interviews podcaster B. In this next episode, podcaster B interviews podcaster C and goes down the line. So it's going to be done as a series and then released as a series. And the first series is just finished. So that should be out within the month, I think, I'm hoping. I mean, sometime in 2015, with the way I do things.
And it's a specific theme, right?
Yeah, each one is theme-based. The first one was science-based podcast. Yeah. So each one is some sort of... in some way a science-based podcast, and so I haven't picked the theme for the second one yet. Maybe I'll just sit here and write, right now we'll do it. Look to your left and let's knock out 7 episodes. And the 80s Alphabet will be the next solo podcast we'll be launching, which is a very short podcast in which I look at a single topic, letter-based, from the 80s. So the first one is A is for Apocalypse. So, yeah.
I was hoping it was going to be Alf.
No, well, maybe it's the second, third.
Great. Well,
all right, so I am co-host on a couple of things. I'm co-host on Drop 3 Inches with Mike. I am co-host on Retro Computing Roundtable. That's it, I think. I sort of feel obliged to say that, you know, something like my favorite Apple II software is the Apple II emulator that you run on the Apple III. But probably I would say actually it's
That's a tough call, but Droll, maybe. That was a very cool
great game.
So I'll say Droll, although that's one that substitutes in for many possible other alternatives. I'll leave it there.
Okay.
I am Kevin. I am co-host of Antic, the Atari 8-bit podcast. When you get tired of your Apple II,
you are tired of life.
Why don't you try a computer with 256 colors and 4 channels of sound?
Ooh, Atari.
Can you remind us, does Antic stand for something? Is that an acronym?
Yes. And if you listen to my podcast, you
might find
out. I can't remember right now. You know, I had a 2C back in the day, and I was really for a while enchanted with Fantavision, which was an app where you could draw like a square, and then in the next frame draw a circle, and it would animate between them. It would do the tweening images, and I just thought that was really cool, and I enjoyed that. Today, Choplifter, my favorite.
Great choice.
Steve?
Steve Weirich, and I'm on the Retro Computing Roundtable from time to time. The most useful Apple II app that I ever had was AppleWorks. I used that all the time back when I was using when I had a 2GS, it was really just a big, fast AppleWorks machine for me, but when I have to look at games, I had some games I tried here and there, but the ones I kept coming back to, I agree with Carrington, were the Infocom text adventure games. Those were just very fun to play.
Okay, I'm Randy, co-host of Antic. Kevin already talked about Antic, so I'm not going to go into more detail there. Also host of Floppy Days, which is a general vintage computer podcast. And I cover vintage computers in the order that they came out, research them, talk about their history, and current information about them. So I've been doing that for a year and a half now. And as far as my favorite Apple II application, I've only had an Apple for a couple years. I'd say my favorite app is Apple Invaders. I love those kind of games. Apple, you know, Invaders or Space Invaders, Galaxian, Galaga, those kind of games. So Apple Invaders is my favorite.
This is Ken Gagne, and I am the sole host of Polygamer, which explores issues of equality and diversity in the gaming industry by interviewing people who are advancing those topics. I'm also the host of IndieCider, which plays indie games, games that are self-published by the developers, and then interviews those developers about the game that I just played. My favorite Apple II program, gosh, Steve said AppleWorks, which is the program I've used the most throughout my life, including to today. Other programs I've thought of in the last few minutes include Carl Bunker's Utilities Quit2 and Filetrix, David Schmidt's ADT Pro, games like Oregon Trail, which still are being remade nowadays, or Brian Peachy's Retro Fever, which is pretty awesome. But I'm going to cheat a little bit and go with Microzine, which is not a single program. It's a monthly a magazine or so published by Scholastic. There were over 36 issues, most of which I have, courtesy of the generosity of K-Festers. We had it in my school lab when I was in grade school, and since I was like the only kid with a computer in his home, they let me bring home an issue of Scholastic every weekend and bring it back on Monday. And there were just so many Saturday mornings when I woke up before anybody else in the house so I could have the computer to myself and just spent the whole morning playing those adventures.
Very nice. And I'm John from the Retro Maccast, and my favorite, I think my all-time favorite Apple II game, Snakebite. I play that for hours.
Doesn't seem right that we got all the way around without anybody mentioning Loadrunner and Choplifter. So
I said,
well, I was only Loadrunner, and they only said one. I couldn't.
Yeah, that's why I didn't.
That's so
good. It's a pretty good game.
Nice.
Loadrunner.
Because otherwise, Diamond Mine would have been on my list also.
And I should put it, ADT Pro, I don't know how I failed to think of that.
That's
a good one.
So, anyway.
John, did you see?
It's like Super Magic.
I recently did a video interview with my father for Father's Day about his history with gaming, because he's the one who got me into
that
the Apple II, the video games.
Yes, I did.
And I asked him, so like, what was your first game? And he said Snakebite.
Yep.
He couldn't remember the name, and he thought it was a worm.
But I was listening, I'm like, it's Snakebite. He's talking about Snakebite.
And then it pops up on the screen. That was it.
Yep.
We've also learned that John does a crazy good Alf impression.
Is that true?
Oh.
A for Alf.
Anyone have anything else they want to say?
Kansas Fest is amazing. I am so glad I'm here, and I'm going to come every year as long as they have it.
Apple II forever.